everybody. This is Asma Quraish. I'm going to be moderating the conversation today with our two renowned guest speakers. I hope you have a good quality of sound and everybody is connected. If you have any technical issues, please raise it on a chat. So basically, we're going to spend the next 60 minutes with each other. The webinar is going to be speaking mostly about the future of brands, of marketing and brands innovation. It is definitely on the aftermath of the COVID-19. We're not going to be focusing on the crisis and whatever happened. We are going to look at the impact of the pandemic on our industry and try to get as many learnings as possible from the two guest speakers that we have. So basically, I would like to introduce Antoine Chalita, who is the head of industry for of CPG in Snap Inc., who is also sponsoring this this webinar, and Mehdi Mutawakil, who is the CMO of L'Oréal. Welcome, guys. So, are you in? Everything is fine?
Yes. Hello.
Yes? Fantastic. Very good. So basically what we're trying to do today, like I said earlier, we would like, as a marketing society in general, we are an organization that tries to strike provocative conversations around our industry to push you to think outside of the box and to help you answer all the embarrassing or not so conventional questions around the industry. So the spin we will take on this is different from what the usual or the classical way of tackling the COVID-19 and its impact on the industry. So it's going to be a very flowy conversation between the three of us, where we will be sharing with you our learnings, our experiences, and hopefully we will dedicate some time towards the end to the Q&A. But in the meantime, if you do have questions and would like to interrupt or there is something that's super pressing, you cannot wait for the Q&A, feel free to send it on a chat and I will intercept it and I will ask the participants to answer your questions. So for myself, I am Asma Quraish, like I said earlier. I am a member of the board, a board member of the Marketing Society. I also run my own consultancy, and I was before that CMO of KFC in the Middle East, and I had several other positions in marketing in the Middle East and North Africa and Asia. So I'm super happy to be with the two panelists that we have today. From the preparation yesterday, it was a fantastic warm-up, and I am super excited to share the insights that they're going to be sharing with us today. So if you don't mind, I know that I've already introduced you briefly, but it would be great if we can have Mehdi and Antoine also speak about themselves briefly before we start with the questions. So I will start with Mehdi. Go ahead.
Sure. Thank you so much, Asma. Hello, everyone. Super pleased and humbled to be with you today. And maybe just a few words about me. So my name is Mehdi Mutawakil. I'm the Chief Marketing Officer for L'Oréal Middle East. Next October, I'll be celebrating my 15 years of career and professional experience. When I look back at it, 50% of I spent it in a different industry than where I am today. I started my career in telecom. I worked for Orange back then in Morocco for 8 years. And I was responsible of different marketing roles, and I managed the biggest segment at the time was the prepaid segment from a marketing point of view. Then I decided to switch to a very different industry, and that was my second passion, a professional passion around skincare and beauty. I joined Beiersdorf, the makers of Nivea, such a beautiful company, with beautiful brands and beautiful teams as well, where I had the chance to be responsible to take different roles on marketing and sales. My last role was marketing director for the MENA region, responsible for Nivea mainly in the from Nivea mainly, and then mid-year last year, L'Oréal approached me and pitched to me what I will call at this stage the job of my dream, which is combining a little bit the two passions I told you about, like technology, innovation, and then beauty. And as a CMO, this is exactly what keeps me busy and what I'm trying to deliver with the team here in Dubai, and be part of this fantastic journey that L'Oréal as a group started a few years ago to become a beauty tech and to transform the beauty for the future. So yeah, that's a little bit about me and what I've been doing over the last years.
We wish you the best of luck, Mehdi, and I'm sure you're gonna just leave a fantastic mark on L'Oréal. I feel the excitement and the passion from your introduction. Now let's move to Antoine. Would you just kindly introduce yourself in a few minutes or seconds?
I'll do my best. As Asma said, I'm Antoine. I head the CPG industry vertical here at Snap for the Middle East and North African region. I've been in this region for the last 15 years. Most of my career was around leading CPG brands from the media agency side of things, helping them really kind of optimize the way they connect with audiences. And that journey led me into kind of an intersection with Snap in this part of the world, helping them and helping our advertising partners as well, making the most out of our platform in terms of connecting with our audiences and really kind of creating value, but at the same time capturing the value that a lot of these businesses deserve. Working closely with Mehdi in both his remits at Beiersdorf and L'Oréal for some time now. So really happy of this specific engagement we're having today.
Fantastic. Well, nice to meet you again, guys. Let's get started. I mean, we barely have time today and we have so much to share with the audience. So I'm keen on starting on the questions. So basically, if you remember yesterday when we started talking, when we were prepping for this webinar, the thing that we kind of liked or appreciated in the spontaneous conversation is that we found ourselves, especially with the conversation around what happened in L'Oréal, talking mostly about the positivity or the positive spin of COVID-19. So everybody has been focusing a lot on how it impacted every industry from a negative perspective. We know that so many people have not been impacted positively, especially the industries of hospitality or airlines or anything related to movement and travel. However, every industry lives this in a very different way, and even those industries you would find positives. So can we, going back to Mehdi, can you, Mehdi, just tell us again all these positive things that you have mentioned and how COVID-19 actually did us, it is a kind of a blessing in disguise, and how it did you a service rather than a disservice at L'Oréal in the region?
Sure. So COVID-19 was definitely a curse and a blessing for us. So I think a curse, we all know how it impacted our lives and how we live every day. But if we want to focus on the business part and to answer your question, I would say I've seen two positive elements so far from this crisis, one from a business point of view and one from a people point of view. So I will start with the business one. I think you all maybe heard this quote over the last few weeks. It was abused and used and abused, which says there are decades where nothing happens, and then you have weeks where decades happen. So that's exactly what we have noticed in terms of business in really like few weeks. The transformation and the changes that impacted us positively have been tremendous and super, super important. At L'Oréal, to be more specific, we have started our digital transformation agenda a few years ago, and we have finished last year what we call internally our season one of transformation. Then I joined, and that was the mission that I was given, is to take care of the second season of transformation. And we have planned the second season of transformation over the next 3 to 5 years, and then we achieved this transformation in 3 months. So that's how big the impact of COVID was, and at so many elements. I think the biggest one, of course, is e-commerce. So when we used to have a weight of business of e-commerce nearly at the lower side of one digit number, now we are at a high digit two numbers with, and we really like the targets we have set for ourselves for 2022, 2025 have already been reached, and we are now looking at the next step. So I would say COVID was an accelerator for sure and helped us to advance our roadmap. Then from a people point of view, and I think it's the even the most interesting element that I've noticed, you know, like we have an amazing team in at L'Oréal of what we call them the digital champions and the digital transformers, and they are all super young. They're like millennials, Gen Z, and you know how it is in Dubai. You are always far from your support system, and they all live alone. So imagine the lockdown when the lockdown happened, plus of course the business pressure when they had to deliver like very differently than what they used to. They used to be a little bit more on the background, being on the transformation projects and on like more, I would say, long-term milestones. And then at some point they became, they had like the pressure to deliver now. And if I can just give you one example, in our professional division where we have, where we work with hairdressers, of course the hairdressers were completely closed. So the only source of business for a full division was to was e-commerce. So you move from being maybe like a 5-7% of the weight of business of the division to be 200%. So you have to deliver and you're locked down. So I was a little bit concerned at the beginning how they would behave with this pressure and with this new context, but they've done amazingly well. I think that I think it unlocked and revealed some hidden capacities that they had, and also like the bond that they created with each others. How to they? I mean, even on Zoom, on Teams call, they we managed really to be super strong together, even apart. And I would say yes, that's bring the team. I would just say today that the team. Our teams are stronger than before the crisis and are like more beat on the collaboration or on the expertise part as well, because we have used as well the time because we are all at home, and then we there were no longer a limitation of physical, like to organize physical events and trainings. So we did so much upskilling, like so many upskilling programs, and they all moved their competencies and skills to the next level. And last but not least, just to also wrap up on these two elements, business and people. When the first week of COVID, when COVID-19 happened and the lockdown happened, we transferred, we had a team of 35 in terms of digital e-commerce. We transferred 20 additional resources from the offline jobs to the online jobs. And we did it like overnight. It was not planned. And we had to do the onboarding as well for these new resources. And seeing also how this passion was contagious in the full organization was very impressive and amazing for me. So I would say it was in a way a blessing, and now it's is to see how we can capitalize on it. Yeah,
this is to any senior marketeer who has been in the profession for a very long time. This sounds like a miracle, because yeah. I still believe my days when I had to fight for digital or e-commerce being like occupying 2-3% of the total multi-million dollar marketing budget, and we had to fight for it to just get one extra percentage point. But it's also, so now it is like whatever we've been working for years is coming true. It's coming to fruition. It's super quickly. And I do like what you said about living decades in a week or in a couple of days, actually. So super valid points. And it's so true. And I think this is a fantastic thing for the industry, how it gave us that push. And those who are ready were the ones the fastest to adapt and start capitalizing on it. So Antoine, what about your perspective on the same? What was the blessing in disguise for Snap?
To be fair, as a platform, I think we've seen kind of substantial surges in our consumption rate. I think the reduction in mobility, the lockdown, although people were physically apart, there was a clear yearn for people to connect and communicate. Which was an aspect that eventually helped us as well, kind of work with a lot of our advertising partners. in a way where they can benefit from the engagement levels that we're seeing across our community of users, specifically in the GCC market per se. One thing that I'll allude to, and I think this is an emphasis that we've seen kind of come to life during the pandemic, and this is our values as a company. So we talk about being kind, creative, and smart as individuals that are part of the Snapchat and Snap community. So one of the things that we were really kind of proud of is the way we've huddled around our partners, really bringing to surface things that they can support them to be able to kind of do the leaps that a lot of advertisers have done in the past 4 months. That we have not really seen in the past to be that substantial. But more importantly as well, kind of be as a community of snappers here, helping each other throughout the pandemic to do the most out of the job that we're supposed to be doing. And that for me is kind of a strong upside of what we went through and, you know, is something that will definitely kind of, you know, hold dear as we move forward.
So absolutely, I totally agree with you. And We wouldn't be able to predict the impact of what happened on a platform such as you know, Snapchat or even on other social media, because we were thinking people are at home, they don't have anything to do, they don't have anything to say. These things are gonna die. The social communication will just go mute. But it's clearly not what happened. So I'll stay with you, Antoine. And I will build on, I'm going to jump a bit in the subjects that we have to cover. So it just takes us to the acceleration of trends. Don't you think that this, what happened recently did accelerate the trends over the past few months? I mean, I'm just referring to what Mehdi said about living decades in a couple of weeks. So I feel like those trends that we have been talking about, you know, referring to, talking about in the very far future, have been accelerated, are closer to us. So tell me a little bit about that from your perspective.
So I think if we kind of divide the topic into two parts, I think there was clearly an impact on consumer behavior because of the whole context of mobility and productivity. People not being able to move in the way they used to. People not being able to be productive in the way they used to definitely impacted behavior and accelerated specific things that we potentially, a lot of our advertising partners thought that, you know, as Mehdi said, the plans were like a couple of years ahead to actually meet specific objectives. And this is not kind of unfamiliar within a lot of conversations that we probably were having like 6 months back or even 5 months back with our advertising partners. So there's definitely a chunk of behaviors that we're going to be seeing kind of that have benefited from the convenience of being able to kind of make decisions around engagement with brands, around transaction with brands within the palm of your hand, and being able to leverage mobile as a platform to be able to make these type of decisions. But at the same time, I think we need to bear in mind as well that the mobility is circumstantial, the productivity is circumstantial, and eventually there will be kind of some form of relaxation of these elements. But we need to always be mindful of what will kind of register within the minds of our consumers. The convenience, the ability to be able to kind of really leverage what they have. And from a Snapchatter perspective, the fact that the camera stands at the heart of our platform where you can explore and actually communicate with individuals wherever physically distant they are or close to you is something that will enable a lot of marketeers to keep on leveraging the power of engagement that our platform has to offer, but at the same time really be playing along kind of all aspects of the consumer journey, regardless of the kind of type of trends that might not be or type of behaviors that might not be kind of there in the future.
I think absolutely 100% in alignment with you. Before the online experience or whatever was happening in certain platforms was kind of by choice, and then you would have those who are pro and those who are not really so keen and those who are against. But I think with what happened recently, everybody was forced to live virtually, and then I think the result would eventually be a lot of adopters like 50% of the idle population would be adopting the trends that some people were early adopters to, and then some, the skepticism would have been lifted by force because people had to migrate and move to a different platform. So Mehdi, tell us a bit about this, because I know from L'Oreal perspective, there is quite a lot of learnings from this journey.
Yes, there's quite a lot, and I agree a little bit with Antoine on what he said, that the trends existed before. It just it got accelerated with the crisis, and I think it showed as well how much every organization is ready to tackle these trends. If you want to just deep dive a little bit into e-commerce as an example, like 5 years ago, we've designed the roadmap that will take us to, we make us ready when the channel shift will make e-commerce 20% as a weight of business of our brands and our divisions. And when we designed this 20%, of course, we were, like, as I said, at maybe below 5%. So, but we designed the organization and we designed whatever was required to get to this level. And now the idea, of course, is to say, like, how can we be ready for a world, for example, where the e-commerce would be representing 50% of the business. And then we can take many different examples also, like from a brand building point of view. We all knew that that purpose is super important for every single brand, but maybe what happened in COVID is we saw as well that brands are getting pressure to be consistent and to even be clear on what they stand for and what they want to deliver. On the media part specifically, and that's the discussions we have with Antoine every time, is your mixed media. You will need to we all knew that there will be a shift into investments that's going to happen, but we with the crisis, we had to do the shift rather in 1-2 months and not wait for 2 years. So this, I think, wherever part of the strategy you take it, you will see that the trend existed. We knew it was coming. It just got accelerated.
Absolutely. So basically, the learning, I think, for our audience is always know your trends and study them well ahead of time, because the trend sometimes is pushed to you. Something that is expected to come in 10, 15 years might come your way before that. If you recall, yesterday I was mentioning the example of sugar with beverages when I was in soft drinks in PepsiCo. We were like kind of thinking, oh, the Middle East is not going to be on this trend now because everybody loves sugar in Egypt and in the GCC. And then all of a sudden you have numbers, diabetes is increasing, the government is forcing everybody to reduce sugar in the drinks. And then if you were not ready with the proper R&D, proper formulation and proper communication, you would simply lose more than 60-70% of your revenue overnight. So the importance of the homework and being ahead of the curve and preparing for the trend is important, because then sometimes it is accelerated and we have to immediately start executing the actions that we would have prepared. It's such a good segue to the next topic that we would like to speak about, Mehdi. So tell us, I know that you've touched on some of these elements, but I would love to hear you talk about how your approach to brand building has changed with the pandemic, or has improved or evolved with the pandemic.
Yes, sure. So I think first of all is we had to understand what's happening, and then we go back to, for me, what's most important in all discussions and every single strategy is how consumer centric you are and how fast you're able really to understand what's your consumer needs and what they are expecting from you. So I think we were quite good at this element. We had, of course, like our social listenings and our other ways of getting the information. And also, I think the culture in L'Oréal in general is very consumer centric. So we did first of all to understand, okay, what this is, the change is huge. Let's first know exactly what's needed from our side and not jump into to action straight away based on what we saw in a different market or in a different geography, but like really be relevant to the region and to the country where we operate. I think that was the first element. Then I think on the, to answer also your question on the how we have done it, the I think COVID-19, I said that redefined the meaning of brand purpose. And I think never before brands have been asked to show it and to talk about it and be able also to, I mean, explain it in sometimes. And we have, we call some consumers now militant consumers, because they are not just consuming, they are like they, and then we've seen what happened around the world recently, and we can, I mean, it's fascinating to see the pressure that that consumers can bring in the conversation with brands. So from our side, I think one thing we were super proud about is we had this L'Oréal Takes Part initiative, where we have for like beyond before like talking about business and brand building, we built a solidarity program to help all our ecosystem. First of all, like the internal ecosystem, our employees, our the different like suppliers, partners as well. Typically, like I was talking about the hairdressers before, they were affected in a very large extent. So we had to review with them like the policies of payments and understand how we can be there for them and how we can help them to reopen in a safety with the safety measures and every other aspect. And that's the same, by the way, what we had on other divisions, on the demo cosmetic divisions with doctors. We managed to create like a connection to keep our connection with the doctors in a different way, in a virtual world. So we had really nice initiatives without going into the details, but like that helped us to do that. So really like with each we had like the solidarity program with all the affected ecosystem around us. And then we donated as well 4 million dirhams AED of essential care products to the Emirates Red Crescent to help the frontline support on the hospitals. And okay, so that's the kind of first initiatives I think that everyone was expecting from us as a brand and as a group. And then when you go to every single brand, you will have like a specific initiative that is of course 100% in line with the DNA of the brand. And if I take just Garnier as one of our biggest brand in the consumer division as well, we had a very specific program that was addressing where we partnered with the Red Crescent, and also we revealed our commitments for the planet and for the future over the 10 next years as a global initiative. So I think that's kind of we have 25 brands, so I will not be able to go into all the details. But what I want to say is we had first to decorrelate really like brand purpose from business and short term objectives, and then show exactly show our solidarity. And by the way, like I'm talking a lot about L'Oréal, but this is not the purpose of being here. It's also like I just want to say that I was also super impressed by and inspired by what a lot of companies have done in this field, be it on in the region or in other parts of the world, to come together to address some of the most pressing needs brought by the consumers or by the crisis. And I think it was a really great marketing period for marketers at least like me to observe and really see that this shift in terms of how brands becomes more meaningful and less obsessed by the market share or the closing of the month of the quarter. So I would just say that I mentioned a few L'Oréal initiatives and we're super proud about, but I think other companies, even competitors, have done really great on this front.
I think absolutely. I think this was kind of the acid test that reminded humanity that we are human beings selling goods and services to human beings. And yeah, unless we have a very clear consumer and user user-centric purpose, we would be lost in something like this. We wouldn't know how to act. Our brands would be confused. We wouldn't know what to do. But when we put the universe or the community or the end user as a center, and we know how to serve them, it's just an articulation of that in different circumstances. So Antoine, shed some light, please, on this from your perspective. How important is brand purpose right now for you?
I think in general, in the way we've we've acted as a company, we have obviously a responsibility towards our community first and foremost, in the way we make sure that the information that is available on our platform is information that we curate and that we manage. And that's at the forefront. As you rightly said, like being a company such as Snap that is really leveraging human-centered design principles, this is at the forefront of everything that we do. And at the same time, kind of leveraging the privacy principles, the privacy by design principles that we have in mind, we obviously have an internal accountability of what we and the way we work with our community. But to your question around the importance, I think from where we stand and the way we've seen things, and I still recollect that video that circulated in the WhatsApp group of the Marketing Society around the types of communication that started to kind of become very blurry amongst the brands and the way the messaging was around, we're in this together. What I think is important within the context of brand purpose is not only to have one, but to define one that's relevant to the brand and that the brand can commit to. And this is something that, you know, Mehdi mentioned a few examples within the context of L'Oreal and how that really fits in within what they're doing. We have obviously examples of how that fits in within our contribution. And this is where there is a differentiation that comes across, a memorability that comes across with the consumers we're engaging with. But ultimately, and I think most importantly, profitability, market share, and growth are outcomes of value that is being created to consumers. And within that mindset, this is where the definition and the importance of defining a brand purpose actually lies, because this is what's gonna drive organizations and many organizations to compete, to actually capture the value they wanna capture by really creating value that's relevant to their consumers. And I think that's probably one of the biggest learning that a lot of organizations might have realized within the current circumstances.
So you would say that the brands that have a strong purpose have been more successful during the pandemic. So of course, a purpose that is relevant to the brand, obviously, and relevant to the consumer, the end user.
I think in general, I had the opportunity to engage with Alex Edmonds, who wrote a book about called Grow the Pie. Grow the Pie talks about the fact that as a company and as a brand, you can do good and at the same time do well as a business, right? And I think this is something that's extremely valid right now, that at times we confuse or misrepresent as marketeers and as stakeholders and decision makers. The focus on the economics of things really starts by the value that we're creating. And yes, definitely, to your question, I think brands that had the right purpose and defined the right one and acted upon their purpose have actually been more successful and set them apart from the rest. And mind you, Alex Edmonds is a researcher in finance and not in marketing. So yes, imagine the value of that kind of pertinent message coming from people that are scholars in finance and economics rather than marketing. And I think it only empowers marketing decision makers to really kind of, you know, focus where many companies, and as Mehdi said, be it L'Oreal or the Unilevers or the remaining kind of big organizations that are playing in the field, that have really captured. And I think the focus on there is paramount, so that, you know, companies are able to kind of create sustainable growth for them, regardless of crises and regardless of times.
Absolutely. I think that the purpose, the brand purpose, sometimes in these situations would lead automatically to an impact on the top line and the bottom line, depending on the industry. But sometimes it's not necessarily an immediate impact, but it would help elevate the brand equity. And this is the intangible asset that is the most precious one for a brand. It is its connection with the end user. It is its reputation and its equity. Because even brands that might be making so much money, if the equity is not solid, they end up it's not easy to build the equity. So some brands, I mean, just from my experience during the confinement and what I've been going through as an end user, I have built some more respect for certain brands versus others, depending on how they acted or reacted to the circumstances that we were going through. So just to shifting subjects a bit.
One point, sorry, on
yeah, go ahead.
But like, I just want to emphasize on something that Mehdi said at the beginning. And I think that's important as well within the context of purpose. Partners are ready and willing to collaborate because a brand and a business has a purpose. Employees are ready to mobilize whenever a brand or a business has a purpose. And I think this is something that we at times kind of, misrepresent or forget, that the value of a brand purpose doesn't rely only on the consumer engagement, but actually leads to tremendous value that's created to the consumer.
Absolutely. So just moving to another very important subject, knowing that we're really running out of time, and there is so much more to say. I just want to touch on innovation during this crisis. And I'm going back to Mehdi, because he mentioned some examples yesterday during our warm-up that I would love him to share with everybody else. So how has these special circumstances, I'm trying to avoid using the word pandemic in order to remove yes. the negative spin on it. So I don't want to say pandemic or COVID-19. I keep saying special circumstances. So how has the last few months impacted your innovation journey for the brands, for the portfolio brands that you manage? And then I would turn to Antoine with the same question.
Yes, so it changed a lot. And I think what it was, again, positive, because we were ready for it. And the innovation services part was something in our roadmap since a few years now. And to be very concrete, in 2018, L'Oréal acquired its first tech company. So we know to acquire brands, so we know how to acquire brands, sell brands, but like acquiring a tech company was something very new and very different for us. And at the time, to be very honest, because I was from the other side, I was not at L'Oréal yet, I just thought like, okay, that looks like a very nice PR statement and a nice PR position to build on the trends of augmented reality and so on and so forth. But I can tell you it's reality, and it was not a PR move, because the work that has been done in the group since a few years allowed us to be ready for this kind of situations. I mean, we thought it's gonna come. We saw it happening in China, where augmented reality was such a big driver and such a big element into the consumer journey of in terms of beauty. But again, we thought, okay, maybe in 5 years it will reach us. But the group really prepared. We prepared ourselves to that, and the examples I've shared with you, and I can share them again, are like very concrete. So when you go. Today, if you go to any store, for safety reasons, you will not be able to test your makeup. And makeup is definitely one of the categories that you cannot buy if you don't like see the color of the lipstick on your hand or on your lips. And so imagine today that we have embarked the technology into our sites, and soon with our partners as well, where you can with just a selfie, check exactly your look, know exactly how your mascara or the lipstick will look on you, and then you can just buy it by e-commerce or even in the stores. And that's one element that we have developed. I can give a few other examples. So today you can also make a skin diagnosis based on a selfie and really know, as like have a consultation as accurate as the one you will get from your dermatologist in terms of what kind of routine you need, what kind of products you need, what are your skin concerns. And and this technology is up and running, is operational, and we had it already in our different touch points. So that's the kind of situations where you really realize that when innovation is not about today, it's about tomorrow, and you need to invest as early as you can, and anticipate the shifts, so you're ready when it's needed. And I have so many other examples also on the hair coloration and other categories, but we really managed to reinvent the consumer experience throughout the digital life and go outside the really, like, because I think mainly the big mistake that a lot of brands and companies do is they we spent so many years and efforts on building the consumer journey, offline consumer journey, and now that we need to build the online consumer journey, we think that with few banners and few social posts and few collaboration that we will be able to replicate the same. It's not true and it's not possible. The reinventing the consumer journey in an online world is a complete different game and needs technology. So I talked to you about augmented reality or about virtual try-ons, but I'm sure like in the next years, we're already anticipating that voice will be super important in this journey, that other elements as well, other technologies that are far from beauty or from FMCG in general, they will be key in this change. So just to sum up, I would say that it's good to have your products, but then if you don't have this layer of services, how you can engage with your consumers, you will not sustain your brand purpose, because you will not be able also to answer the basic need of your consumer. So yeah,
exactly. It's just it's this kind of in line with what we were saying about trends. Innovation is not an afterthought. It is not something that you react with. It is something that you would have been working on ahead of time, and then you would action, because we just don't take the same, as you said, the same journey and put it online. It is a very different ball game. So unless you would have put the right effort and thinking and technology behind it and the whole consumer journey from a virtual perspective, you wouldn't be able to execute it in circumstances like ours. So Antoine, how about you? Tell us about innovation and how it accelerated or changed during the...
I'll talk about it from two facets, if I may. One, from enabling our advertising partner to really kind of leverage, we believe, an innovative way of being brand and product with our consumers. So from one angle, we know for a fact that, let's say, for example, in Saudi, 90% of our daily active users actually use our augmented reality experiences. And during the lockdown, we've seen a lot of our partners reach out to us to really create that product proximity through augmented reality to be able to feature what was missing from a retail experience and really kind of put the product within the houses of and the homes of a lot of our consumers. I think that's something that we've done. One of the most interesting studies that we've seen was something, an engagement we've done with Onas in specific. During kind of the peak of the lockdown, where Onas came to us with kind of a proposition of how can we really kind of engage with our audiences during Mother's Day. And what we've built together is an augmented reality experience and a campaign that actually led them to reach a return on ad spends that was fivefold the average that they've seen before pandemic. Mind you, that 20% of the sales that were generated were around jewelry, and that was coming from the augmented reality experience itself. Some of the hypotheses during the pandemic was like people's disposable income, people's confidence in transaction is going down. But the reality of things, if we're putting in place the right innovation, if we're leveraging the tools that are disposable, the proximity and the conversion that can be built can be significantly maximized in general. I'll just switch into one thing that I really kind of want to talk about within the context of us as a company innovating. I think almost a month ago, we really kind of went out to the world and showcased the direction we're taking as a company through the Snap Partnership Summit. And what we've done there is really kind of start guiding the way of how we're evolving as a camera platform, a camera to search, a camera to interact, a camera to purchase, but at the same time leverage location. So we've introduced as well places that will kind of help businesses across geographies to be able to really leverage kind of mobile empowered consumers to make decisions while on the go and be able to know kind of the businesses that they engage with. One of the most, I think, fascinating facet to me, and that's kind of a natural extension of the position we have around real friends and the fact that we want to always create an environment where people can connect and communicate amongst themselves, is the introduction of local lenses as well. So local lenses is a concept where AR experiences do not need to be only an experience that I would communicate with someone else, but most importantly, an experience that I can have at the same time in real time with someone else. And that becomes the kind of the next iteration of a lot of the things that we're developing in the background, capturing on a trend that we believe is actually going to be at the forefront of communication, mobile experiences, content consumption, but most importantly as well, to actually empower advertising partners to really be able to kind of engage in many different ways, not only to push upper funnel or mid funnel metrics, but to really convert consumers into transacting with them. And yeah, this is where we stand from innovation as a company.
Fantastic. So sadly, we are running out of time. We only have 10 minutes left in the webinar, although we have so much more to cover, and we hope to have another chance to have you guys again with us so we can discuss more and share more with our audience. I will move to my closing question, and I would like you to kind of take just one minute or 2 minutes maximum to answer it, so we can hopefully still have closing remarks and allow the audience to ask questions. So I'll merge the last two questions, which are basically, if you tell us what does the future look like for you in marketing after what we have gone through, and if there is one message that you would like to pass on to the audience, what would it be? And I'll stick with you, Antoine, then we move to Mehdi, and then I will close.
Obviously, moving away from remote work and the value of remote work, what I want to definitely emphasize on is that mentality of test and learn, risk appetite. I think there was immense learning about how do we support and how do we function within that space. And at the same time, have the flexibility and ability to pivot. I think that's something that is paramount. One point of emphasis that we always see as a platform and as when engaging with our advertising partners is always be user-centric. Think about the user, think about the consumer before thinking about your brand first, and create that bridge between your brand and consumer. And I think as long as we're clear on the context, and as long as the focus and shift is around the value that this context and the audiences that we're engaging with is clear, I think this is the way in the future where a lot of brands are going to be able to kind of maximize the impact of their investments.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Antoine. Can I hear your opinion on this, Mehdi?
I think please? Antoine said it all, so it's going to be very difficult to give a better answer. But I would, I fully agree with you, Antoine, on both topics, be it the test and learn. I think a lot of companies and a lot of people, even in companies, are like still very scared to try new things, and we try to do things per the book or like how we learned them a few years ago, but like being to disrupt things and to try things. I think there's no better time after COVID to do so, because anyway, the base, just to go back to very normal, the base for next year is going to be so different. So it's time, like 2021 will be the year, I think, for any company, any brand to try new things and learn from them. And to be more specific, maybe on your question, Asma, around how marketing will change for the future, I think. And the message maybe for the marketers with us today in the audience is to really invite them to become what I call in general like super marketeers, because today the normal marketeer is not enough, and what you need is really like these super marketeers that have a very strong right brain and a super strong left brain, so they're still able to be very creative, to bring to do strong storytelling, to really be on the edge in terms of strategies, in terms of consumer understanding. So all the traditional marketing part that we all know about, and then you have like a left part that need to be really changed, which is the data driven marketing and the digital. We don't like to call it at L'Oréal digital marketing, we call it marketing at the digital age. which is very different. Yeah. So how you really do your marketing with technology, with everything that we have touched on today on e-commerce, like how really to map your consumer journey in a different way based on the signals you get from the different platforms, be it Snapchat or others. So how you really transform this part of yourself is going to be, I think, a key element. And you know what we're doing right now as well at L'Oréal is we try to push as much our strong marketers to go through journeys of innovation and do expert jobs. And then we're trying to get also our geeks, our very digital experts, to push them to the business and to let them learn the other part, because this is how we believe in the future we will have supermarketers that can really do it all. So my invitation to everyone is to do the same. And at L'Oréal, we are not too bad for doing that. So if anyone is also interested by L'Oréal, they can always contact me on LinkedIn and be very happy to continue the conversation beyond this panel.
So thank you so much, Mehdi and Antoine. We have two questions in the Q&A. One of them you just answered now, Mehdi. Someone is interested in L'Oréal, so I would invite you to respond to them straight away if you want on the Q&A. And but anyway, you've offered to connect on LinkedIn, which is quite generous of you. The second question we've got is related to my concluding remark. So thanks for asking. I think it was Fadwa Al-Alami. So basically, the question was, are there any things in marketing that are not being shaken, that are going to stay all the time? Certain things are evolving, certain things are changing. What about the things that will stay? So basically, what I was going to say, and what I always say to my clients when they come seek my help in Think Big, I always say marketing is always the same, but everything around us keeps changing. A good marketeer, or what you, Mehdi, call a supermarketeer, is someone who constantly understands the brand that he or she works for, who is on top of the market and the environment that we are operating in, and how the consumer consumes the brand and consumers the information. So when we have people, when a marketeer understands this ecosystem, how is information transferred, and how is the brand consumed, and what is the brand and who is the consumer? Nothing will shake that marketeer, because that marketeer will understand that if now we are mobile first, then this technology is important. When we are e-commerce driven, then we have to move in that direction. I think the principles of marketing have not changed at all. What has been changing is one or many things related to the parameters that I just stated. So, and someone who constantly connects with these will never have issues, because they would know what era and what people are we marketing to, and what type of products or proposition or communication strategy to give to them in order for them to understand us and go eventually and use either service or product. So this is the wrap up. So thank you so much again, guys. And thank you, Snap, for facilitating this webinar. I hope the audience enjoyed it as much as I did. And I'm pretty sure Mehdi and Antoine also enjoyed talking about the transformation.